Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody. This is syndicatednews.net, and I'm Ruthie. And this evening, unfortunately, we are going to have to discuss George Zimmerman yet again. Many of the things that families and attorneys and witnesses and participants in the George Zimmerman trial warned about have been happening for the last few weeks. George Zimmerman is acting out. And it's a bit of a real problem because it's affecting lots of people. If you recall, on February 26, George Zimmerman, having self-appointed his person to patrol the area where he lived, saw a young man that he didn't recognize and decided to follow him around the grounds. It was a rainy night. It was an awful night. And the boy George killed that evening was only 17. Trayvon Martin was a kid. In fact, when everyone involved with the reporting of this story used Trayvon Martin's pictures, they made a point to blur out his face and to make him look obscure. I refused to blur him out. And I explained this to his uncle, after which Trayvon Martin was named. I told him in the cafeteria, in the courtroom, I didn't hide Trayvon's face. Because Trayvon had not developed, he was too young yet, he really hadn't developed secondary sexual characteristics such as the Adam's apple, the heavy, the hair under the arms, and the full, you know, a beard. Not at all. He had baby boy fuzz, like a kid, like a teenager has. He hadn't developed his voice yet. His flesh, where his muscles should have been, was very, very light. He was a kid. He was a boy. And it was just heartbreaking. It was just heartbreaking that this happened at all. It was. And I told his uncle, I'm not going to make him look like a man, and I'm not going to cover him up. I want people to know that it was a child that was killed. In fact, I remember that the night I got the call, it was 2 or 3 in the morning, February 27th, once people explained to me what had happened, I never named him by name, and at the time we didn't know, but because he was still a child under the eyes of the law, I called him child, and even throughout the trial, I never changed the file's name. I always referred to him as child, because that's really what he was. I refused to make a man of him. He wasn't. He was a kid. A skinny kid at that, who had his aspirations to be an MMA person and just couldn't. And we have one of our guests here now. Let's see who we have. Welcome to syndicatednews.net. Who's with us?
This is Kyle Kilbin Williams from the West Coast in Carmel, California.
Oh, Kyle, thank you so much for coming. Basically we're talking about the fact, my memories of the night that Trayvon Martin was killed. And it was just a tragic night, and I was saying that I had not changed my file. I left it. I called a child then, and I left it as that. And I ran into Trayvon Sr., his uncle, in the courtroom, in the cafeteria. And I told him, my name is Ruthie from syndicatednews.net, and I am responsible for posting Trevon's photo without obscuring it, without pixelating it, without making it any different. I wanted people to see that he was a kid, and basically he was a kid. He didn't have the characteristics that a man has. He just didn't. He was still a kid. And it was just unfortunate. And a lot of people wanted to talk about the protection of the home and, you know, and protecting the home. Actually, I understand protecting the home, but that night, George Zimmerman wasn't protecting his home. He was taking it upon himself to perform a watchman or guard duty responsibility that no one had invited him to do, that he wasn't responsible to do. And it was raining, and he was angry. He was angry because he had just had a major fight with his wife, Shelley, and he was patrolling the area in the dark, in the rain. He was really angry that night. And yesterday or the day before, when Good Morning America, I think it was, asked Shelley Zimmerman, does George have a temper? She said, I'd rather not answer that. But today already he's proven it. He's proven it again and again. Now, when a person commits a crime, the information related to similar crimes or similar behavior called propensity of behavior, that comes into being because that shows that the individual has done this before or caused this incident to happen before. But the things that people were calling in to talk to the prosecutors about, how selfish George was and how what a bully he was and how racist he was, none of that applied because it hadn't to do with murder. And the case at hand, when it came to Trevon Martin, was murder. It was a murder. So none of those things mattered. And even though the prosecutors investigated and interviewed these people and recorded them, and all those recordings were collected, and yes, I have them all, none of them really applied. Now it's over. He's been acquitted. And he's gone back to the same behavior that people accused him of before the trial began. So, Kyle, what do we do with someone who's acting out like this? Because he's acting out in every direction. Today, well, let me play this tape for you. Here it is. Let's play it. Pardon?
Okay, good.
Okay, let's play it so you could hear it. Oh, and by the way, Aphrodite Jones, the renowned mystery writer, she writes thrillers and she writes about court cases. She's a crime writer. She called today. She called us exclusively. She wasn't speaking to anyone else. And she gave us her idea of the case because she and I covered it together, actually. And we sat in our syndicated newsroom at Sanford, Florida. Well, that's what we all referred to it as, the syndicated newsroom. And she sat there with us. And let's take a listen. Here it is. Dina Stewart is our Miami Bureau Chief for syndicatednews.net in Miami Beach. Dina, are you with us? Okay, now, this first one I'm going to play is actually Dina, and actually, I'm going to play that second because the other ones, I need you to hear all of it, all of what happened, and it's only 5 minutes long, and let's see, here we go. Let's play that. Dina Stewart is our Miami Bureau Chief for... Forgive me, guys, it's the same tape, but take a listen. Here we go.
Beach.
Dina, are you with us?
I'm with you all the way.
Dina, you had something to say to Shelley Zimmerman, and I thought that was so tender. I wanted you to record it. What was it that you were saying?
Just my heart goes out to her. I recognize the horrible situation that she's in, and it's just sad that she's in that situation. And I don't know what I can do to help her. But if it's support that this woman needs, just to know that there are probably a lot of people out there who wish her well, who want to see good things happen to her because she got herself into a mess, And it's unfortunate that she got stuck with it and he got away with it. But if there's anything that people can do just to lend her a shoulder to cry on, support in some way to know that she's not alone and that she doesn't have to feel so victimized, people should just really extend themselves to let her know that, because I think she needs that.
She is all alone. Look at what happened. He was acquitted. He has a clean record, and she has a felony. She lied to a judge for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it doesn't escape me that George Zimmerman's father's a judge. And I don't think having a patriarch in the home who happens to be a judge, that judge is going to allow any of the young people in the family to lie or not lie to a judge. I think he knew full well that Shelley was going to lie.
Oh, absolutely. And she was encouraged to do it. I don't think she did it on her own, especially if they were separated.
And that was the loneliest day. She's been there for every single court date. Even if she wasn't in the courtroom because she wasn't allowed to, every single day she was there. But when it came to face a perjury charge, basically she lied to Judge Lester, she was all alone. There wasn't a Zimmerman in the building or on the grounds. She was all alone.
Exactly. She did what she felt was the right thing a wife is supposed to do for their husband. And she went out on a limb for him. He betrayed her. Unfortunately, she's still in the muck.
Yeah, she's in the muck, and he's out of it. He's completely free.
Yeah, he's free. He's pushing the envelope. He's going to do something. I think everybody is just waiting to see what that's going to be. But everybody knows it. This is not a surprise. His traffic tickets, his speeding tickets, I mean, those were little minor incidents. This is another one, him showing up and suddenly being abusive. Who knows what's going to happen next? But something will, and eventually it'll probably be something totally unrelated. He will push that envelope a little bit too far, and it's going to come barreling down on him. And I think everybody, or at least a lot of people out there, can't wait for that to happen.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dina, so much. I really appreciate your help.
I'm sorry that it's about a situation that is totally out of everybody's control. But, if we could all just be there a little bit, maybe she'll feel a little bit better. Who knows?
You never know. But at least it's nice to know, and it's nice to hear that there are people in the community that support her position, because she was basically abandoned.
Yes. Yeah, abandoned and betrayed. Yeah, it's too bad.
There's an article, in fact, in syndicatednews.net on the front page. It says, as predicted here, Shelley Zimmerman was abandoned by George and his family.
You were there in the courtroom every single day. You have the entire backstory. You know the people involved. You've heard it from the other people in George Zimmerman's life, people that you're not allowed to talk about. So you basically know what this man is all about. And I know it's very difficult to keep a lot of this quiet, and I know you have to.
The thing is, it's a propensity of behavior. If he were stealing apple pies, and this was about the theft of an apple pie, then that would apply. But it doesn't matter what he does. In general, what I think he is a bully. He's a master bully. And it has nothing to do. It was a murder case. So those behaviors, however poorly he treated people, however poorly he treated women, it didn't matter because that had nothing to do. This was a murder. Now, if he had attempted to kill someone else, then that would have been a propensity behavior. But that's why it didn't come in. None of his behaviors came in. But those recordings still exist, and this is Florida. We have what you call the Sunshine Law. And we will be listening to those tapes and discussing them.
Great. I think it's all great.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dina.
Thank you, Ruthie,
okay,
for keeping us all informed.
Thank you, honey. Bye.
Bye.
And, Kyle, what I would like you to talk to us about is basically betrayal.
What would you like me to say about betrayal? I must say that I'm I never, you did believe that George Zimmerman was going to be serving time for this. I always thought he'd be acquitted.
You always said it from day one that he would be acquitted, and in the courtroom with my colleagues, I always said the same. He will be acquitted, and they were shocked when he was. There was not enough evidence for this case, for that case. There wasn't. Now it's over. The case is over. He's been acquitted.
I never heard enough. You and you always did say that, that Shelley Zimmerman was in big trouble for the lying. We talked about that in depth.
Remember?
I totally remember that. You totally called that. So good for you on that. Bad for Shelley. However, it's concerning to me that she was not truthful in that 911 call when she said there was a firearm. Apparently, there wasn't. Her father was not hit in the nose. She called an ambulance. The ambulance came. The firemen took nobody away. There wasn't.
By the way, there was a gun. There was a gun, absolutely, and he kept his hand on it, and that's how he was threatening them with it. So give us a moment. Let's have this other guest join us.
Okay.
517, join us.
Yes, I just wanted to kind of put some two cents into what I've been listening.
Please
pretty much,
do.
You know,
please do. Join us, absolutely.
Yes, I mean, let's look at Zimmerman's credibility. I mean, you know, from the moment that he was found not guilty with the Trayvon Martin case, I mean, the fact that his actions recently with his traffic tickets and then what, you know, transpired yesterday was, or I'm sorry, today I should say, pretty much kind of put the nail on the head, so to say, in the sense that, you know, his credibility is nothing, and he pretty much, he's a murderer, in my opinion, you know. And he's guilty as charged, you know. I mean, his actions speak louder than words, you know. His credibility is everything, you know. And he hasn't shown any type of, I don't know how to put it. He has showed that, you know, he's innocent, you know, from the Trayvon Martin case. So that's pretty much all I had to say, you know, and that's just my personal opinion, obviously. But
thank you.
Like I said, it's all about credibility
even nowadays. It's credibility is everything. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. What state are you calling from?
I'm actually from Michigan.
Welcome, Michigan. That's wonderful. And your name?
Yes, my name is Asian.
Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us. Well,
thank
what
you.
I wanted to say for to the families who were in town dealing with this, I did cover that trial, and I covered every hearing. And a lot of what is seen on television, on headline news or on any other system, is not what is actually heard in the courtroom. So much of what goes on in the courtroom is not shown on television, is not, the jury never hears it, and people that were present, we saw a different trial than what was portrayed in television. And it's unfortunate that there are so many laws that are applicable that don't allow the jury to hear information that basically is, it's so necessary. It's so necessary, but the law doesn't allow it. It's very, very interesting that way. And here is Aphrodite Jones, the world-renowned crime writer. She's with us this evening. And so is the public information officer from Lake Mary, Florida, where the incident happened. The incident today occurred in Lake Mary, where Shelley Zimmerman's father lives. And it happened in Shelley Zimmerman's home. And then we're going to talk about Mark O'Mara, because that was real fast and really good. And let me tell you, if I were in trouble, I would call up Mark O'Mara. But I want to show you how saying something slightly or saying it in a certain tone or in a certain way can actually make it sound like something totally different. And I saw that today when Mark O'Mara was interviewed about George's behavior. Here we go. This is Ruthie from Tell Me at syndicatednews.net, and Joining me is Aphrodite Jones.
Thank you, Rafe.
Aphrodite, as you recall, you and I got to cover that trial, and we got to sit in what we used to call the syndicated newsroom at the Sanford Criminal Justice Building. And we it was great having met you and working together. And now George gets, he did get acquitted, and now he gets arrested again. Talk to me.
Ruthie, we talked about this off the record back in Sanford, that we really felt that this man was not just a wannabe cop, but really a vigilante and somebody who just couldn't control himself and was out looking for trouble. I believe you and I had a lot of talks about this, and on the air as well, some of it. Here's the proof. What further proof do we need? He's running around threatening his wife and his father-in-law with a gun, and he feels that his manpower comes from gunpowder and that he's some kind of law enforcement. In my opinion, the prosecution overcharged him with second-degree murder. They should have gone for manslaughter, and the jury would have found him guilty of manslaughter. I believe they would have. They were looking for ways to find him guilty of manslaughter. That's why they asked that question about it when they were deliberating. Had the prosecution gone for manslaughter, it would have been lower charge and easier to prove, and then we would not have this guy running around like a madman threatening whomever he well pleases with a gun. It's nuts.
And if you recall, before the trial began, during the hearings, several people came forward, including people he had grown up with, who came to give the story of who the real George Zimmerman was. And those interviews were recorded, and they were part of the legal process. And while many new reporters who came at the last minute had never heard those recordings, legitimate reporters who are very professional had never really heard or listened to those testimonies or those reports from people who had worked with him, people who grew up with him, and they are very telling.
Yeah, you're right, Ruthie. And the other thing that is telling that no one really focused on is that his best friend, he testified at trial, is an U.S. Air Marshal. What does a U.S. Air Marshal do? They go on planes with guns. They're the only people in the world that are around on an airplane with a gun. And that's who encouraged George to get a gun. And that was George's best friend of 5 years. He said so himself. And what do you think that George did all those years with his best friend? Do you think that they didn't talk stories about how cool it is to get on planes and with guns and you know, fight the bad guys? And what? I mean, this was his life. This is why he applied for that ride-along at the Sanford Police Department, which he did, you know, prior to shooting Trayvon Martin. This is why he tried to be a cop in D.C. I mean, his life was all about wanting to be the tough guy, the big kahuna. And nobody looked behind the curtain. You're right. Of the reporters, nobody looked behind that curtain to see that. Even Ruthie, the guy who was his best friend in the world, wrote a book. They interrogated him on the stand, cross-examined him about that book. And in that book, the best friend of Zimmerman says, Zimmerman's account of what happened is that Trayvon grabbed the gun. Well, that's different from what Zimmerman told police. Zimmerman told police he thought Trayvon was going for the gun. So, you know, you have to wonder, why would the best friend get it wrong and then write a book about it and have it in a book and in print? I just think that this guy couldn't wait to find somebody to run his venom against. That's just me. It's an opinion. I can't say anything other than the fact that right now, today, with him being arrested for this, I feel as though my point has been well taken. And it's unfortunate because now we have half the population in America really up in arms, and maybe half the population of the world, who knows, with this decision and with what's going on here. I mean,
he pulled a knife on them first, and then when the conversation got worse, then he pulled a gun on Shelley Zimmerman and her father as well.
Well, and here's this other thing, Ruthie, that's weird. When I say half the population, I find it strange that I still get a lot of feedback from people that tell me that George Zimmerman was a good guy and he was protecting the neighborhood. And he made it was unfortunate that Trayvon hit him and he defended himself. There's still a lot of people out there that believe that.
A lot of people. Yes.
And I just don't know how they can believe it. If they were sitting in the courtroom and they were watching what we watched and they saw the evidence that the defense attorneys fought to keep out of in front of the jury, and if they saw and they understood what was behind this man, as you say, that the history of this guy, he is not a stable person. And he was looking for trouble. And somehow half the country has got it twisted around, and the jury got it twisted around that Trayvon asked for trouble, that Trayvon was the one who somehow was. No, I believe Trayvon was defending himself. I believe that when Zimmerman said that he said to Trayvon, came up to him and said, "What's your problem, MS?" And Zimmerman turned back and said, "I don't have a problem." And then he said, "I started reaching in my pocket for my phone." What do you think that kid thought he was reaching for, a phone or a gun? And what do we know what he was actually reaching for? I'm sure he's going to punch George Zimmerman if he sees that this guy's been following him around, chasing him around, and now he's reaching in his pocket. He's going to let him reach in his pocket for what is a gun?
I also do not believe it. In any case, now it's time for us to revisit those recordings from the people who grew up with him and the people that he hurt in one way or another. Now we've got to revisit those recordings because this is the state of Florida, and you know that in the state of Florida we have the Sunshine Law. We don't hide anything. So we will here at Syndicated News be airing those recordings. And as you know, we have Shelley Zimmerman's entire divorce document. It's right here on syndicatednews.net. And we will have today's arrest and all of that record. And we will be talking about this on Blog Talk Radio and on Syndicated News.
I do have a function. I'm not sure when it's, how long it'll go.
Dish. What function is it and who's going to be there? I hear Suzanne Lucci is going to be there.
Lucci and Paula Gunn and, a whole bunch of women from the ID Network and also Glamour Magazine is throwing this event. So it's a victims advocate event, actually.
Where are you going to be? Do you live in New York City now?
I do live between New York and Florida.
That's right. You did tell us that. That's right. Okay, then. Thank you so much for your courtesy and your grace, as always. I think it's interesting to have your opinion and his people that grew up with him and people that worked with him, because that database was closed since the case was – there was an acquittal, and the case was – it's over. It was over. But I have those recordings. I have them all.
I can't wait to hear them. I can't wait to hear them.
And then when you hear these recordings, you're going to say, "Oh, my God." And I'll tell you why. Because while they're not about murder, and let's face it, you can't use material that's not a propensity of that crime, since they're not about murder.
Right.
But these are unrelated because they were mostly about George Zimmerman's bullying. He is a master bully.
He's a bully, and that was the thing. He thought he was protecting the neighborhood. He wanted to be a hero, and he was going to do that by what? Killing somebody?
Well, don't forget, recently in Florida, we had a fellow that shot his wife and uploaded the picture of his dead wife to Facebook.
Yes, how disgusting. I mean, crazy. Also crazy, and really, I mean, that's just... I don't even have a response for that.
I spoke to his neighbors, and guess what his neighbor said? His name is Derek Medina. He shot his wife, Jennifer Alfonso, and he uploaded her photo to Facebook. And everyone was blurring it out and pixelating it, and I didn't do that. First of all, because this wasn't a horrific crime.
He didn't dismember her. It was just
no,
a photo.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And she actually fell back and just fell back. I use the photo as it was because I want people to see what real murder looks like and stop babying themselves. They have no problem watching gore and dismemberment in what they call teenage action movies. But then they have a problem
right.
seeing it on the news. But they have no problem seeing 60 children on a pile that were just killed with sarin gas in Syria. There's no problem looking
yeah.
at that, but they have a problem looking at a dead person because it's a dead person. That's nonsense. And you know what will happen? A year and a half will go by before it's time for Derek Medina to have his trial, and a lot of people will have forgotten that he did that.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope not. Because,
well, we're
going to
keep that picture at Syndicated News so that people can remember her and not just
yes.
throw it under the rug and say, oh, yes, he killed her, put her picture on Facebook. He did it. Don't forget it.
Don't forget it, and don't forget that he was proud of it. And that is
his neighbors said that he was always walking around with a gun in his waist belt because he felt that he was patrolling the neighborhood and keeping them all safe.
I knew you would come right back to Zimmerman, and there you have it.
And I said, sir, would you repeat that? And he repeated it. He said, for years, he's been living here, all the while he's been living here. He walks around with a gun in his waistband, and he's always pulling up his shirt, letting people know he's got a gun there, and he's always calling himself the private neighborhood watchman, and he's always walking around and prowling at 2 and 3 in the morning with the gun in his waistband.
And here's the other thing, Ruthie, that I don't understand. People actually believe that somehow Zimmerman was an appointed watchman and that he was had a job as a watchman. No, he was self-appointed.
Self-appointed, and so was this fella in Miami.
Well, he wasn't voted into office by anybody.
No, not at all.
People have the impression that this man was chosen to be the watchdog.
And
no, he chose himself, Zimmerman.
He appointed himself, and so did the fella, Derek Medina, that killed his wife, Jennifer Alfonso, in Miami. Same circumstance. Both of them
unbelievable.
Self-appointed. Both of them carried guns.
But what Zimmerman did and then faced a jury and walked away, that is a travesty, my opinion.
Anyway, thank you, Aphrodite. It's always wonderful having you on Syndicated News.
This is Aphrodite Jones, and I'm here on syndicatednews.net.
We're not sure who the aggressor is. We don't know if there even is an aggressor, per se. And right now, we're just trying to get all of our ducks in a row and figure out what we got.
Okay, and will you be releasing a statement later in the day?
Yes.
Thank you. And this is Officer Hudson?
Yes, it is.
From the Lake Mary, Florida Police Department.
Yep.
And are you in public information?
Yep, I'm PIO.
911, do you need police, fire, or medical?
This is some officer.
Are you police?
Road.
All right, we do have units en route to you, ma'am. Is he still there?
Yes, he is, and he's trying to shut the garage door on me.
Is he inside now?
No, he's in his car, and he continually has his hand on his gun, and he keeps saying, step closer. He's just threatening all of us with
step closer
his firearm. And he's going to shoot us.
Okay.
He punched my dad in the nose. My dad has a mark on his face. I saw his glasses were on the floor. He had accosted my father and then took my iPad out of my hand and smashed it and cut it with a pocket knife. And there's a Lake Mary city worker across the street that I believe saw almost all of it.
Okay.
He's sitting in a truck right now. He just showed up here, but my phone died, so I had to call you from my father's phone.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. I was trying to get you back, and it kept going to voicemail.
Yeah.
All right.
But I'm really, really
we'll have you in the area where you're at, okay? So just stay on the line with me.
Okay. Okay. I don't know what he's capable of. I'm really, really scared.
All right, there are multiple units in the area. All right. This is, you
okay.
said this is Shelly, right? What's your phone number that you're calling on now?
Yes. Oh, the police are here.
Yep, what is Zimmerman doing right now?
He's in his truck There's police here with their weapons on.
Does he see them?
I'm sorry?
Does he see them?
Yeah, they're telling his bodyguard to get out of the way. Oh, my God. Dad, get behind a car or something. I don't know if he's going to start shooting at us or not.
Are you guys outside right now?
Yes, we are. And the police have their weapons on. Dad, get inside the house. Doors might start shooting at us. I don't know. We're going inside the house.
Okay, go back inside.
Oh, my God.
Are you guys both inside now?
Yes.
Okay, stay in there, okay? Let the police take care of it.
Okay. He's got his hands in the air. He's not touching his weapon.
Okay. Is your father needing medical?
Like. Dad, do you need medical? He says no, but I think he does. He does need medical. He's shaken. He said he feels like he's going to have a heart attack. His nose. Yes, you do, because your nose looks like it could be broken. I think he should have a medical, if we can have an ambulance come.
Sure. They will have to stay. They won't be able to approach until the situation outside is secured. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Okay. You guys are safe inside, correct?
Yes.
Shelly, you're doing really good, okay? This is a tough situation for anyone. All right? Let's stay on the line with you, all right? Until our units can speak with you, all right?
Okay.
All right, are you okay? You said he did take something out of your hand. Do you need medical as well?
I don't think so. Maybe just shock.
Okay. All right, I'm going to go ahead and get FD to respond, okay?
Okay. Dad, get inside right now.
Make sure he stays inside. Until someone comes and lets you guys know it's okay for you to step out, stay inside.
Okay.
We're getting everyone on the line to come to you, all right? But like I said, they can't come up to check out your father until they secure the scene, okay?
Okay. Hold on one second.
Okay, Shelly, take a couple deep breaths for me, all right?
Someone's in there?
Excuse me?
There's this woman in there. Oh, my God.
Oh, my.
Shelly?
Like mirror to Charlie 10. Are you 1025 with the complainant?
Now, the reason that's important, not just interesting, but important, is because when this happened today, immediately, Mark O'Mara went to the scene with his technology specialist, that big fellow with the very sharp black hair and the black-rimmed glasses. He's his IT technology specialist, and he accompanied Mark O'Mara to the scene. And they talked to Shelly and talked her out of filing a report because he would be in so much trouble. And she didn't file charges. Let's discuss that. Kyle?
Well, I'm bothered that both you and, if I heard this correctly, and Aphrodite stated that George was arrested today. And that's simply not true.
He was arrested and he was let go. The three of them were arrested, in fact. The three of them were taken to the station. They didn't have a choice. They were taken into custody against their will, all three of them.
Okay, so
and then George O'Mara went on the air and corrected everything and cleaned it up and made it just lovely. Oh, no, there was no arrest, none at all. And gun, there was no gun, not at all. He actually said that. And people believe it. He goes on the air and he does a public relations spiel.
Well, that is what I'm reading as well. That
I know, but you got to understand that this is a very well-oiled machine, and they go right to the press, and they go right to social media, and they spin it how they need it, like politicians.
Right, but it does.
You really think Shelley is not educated enough to know enough to go up against the judge and lie to him? She was told to. She did it. She now has a felony charge against her for lying to a judge, and she's got to work out of it. Got to do probation, got to do community service, all of that. George has been acquitted. His hands are clean.
Ruthie, am I correct? Didn't we listen to tapes? Because you've gotten every darn thing, which is just fabulous. Tapes of them discussing in the jailhouse how they were going to move money, do things in almost a giggly sort of conspiratory fashion?
Absolutely. And his sister was part of that conspiratorial laughter. She, too, was moving money for him. The two of them were.
That didn't sound like Shelley was being forced in any way, shape, or form, if my memory serves me correctly on that. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for her on that one. I think she did it of her own free will for whatever reason, to protect her husband, whatever. And the other thing I'm bothered by, and tell me, again, I'm in California, you're in Florida, you're right there.
That's why I wanted you to participate this evening, because you've always had the other viewpoints, and it's so rich, and it's so important. That's why I wanted you to participate.
Shelley Zimmerman asked that her husband pay for a permanent life insurance policy with her named as the beneficiary, according to a divorce petition made public last week. Really?
Absolutely. She should.
Really? I wish my ex-husbands would give me a life insurance policy. I mean, hello? How does that work? I mean, why in the world would he do that? I mean, he's divorcing her.
Most people, when they divorce now, it's almost mandatory in some states that couples provide insurance for each other and the children, because so many don't want to. So many people don't want to.
They're going to be married.
But in the case where they're splitting up, there's always going to be this argument. And many, many lawyers have that request placed in the divorce document, even if it's not going to be honored. Let's talk to 843. Yeah, even if it's not going to be.
No.
Yeah.
It's state to state and policy to policy, but it is my understanding. Funny, we weren't talking about this case that hadn't happened yet, but a friend of mine and I were discussing the fact that you don't necessarily need the signature of anybody to obtain a life insurance policy on them as long as you are paying for the policy.
But I don't know about that. I've got to learn. I can't. One of the wonderful things about Blog Talk Radio or any station is, personally, I don't talk about stuff I don't know. And when it comes to insurance, I don't know insurance.
That is something I heard yesterday. It's just something that we.
I'm very interested in that. That's very interesting.
Because a friend of mine, a family member, called me and said that her husband, who loves her, won't get a life insurance policy over and above what he has from work. Because his comment was, and he does love her, but his comment
he
was,
doesn't want her to not, she doesn't want her to knock him off.
He said, he teased with that, and then he came back and said, and I don't want you having a great big party after I'm gone, which is selfish of him in that case. And that's when we started discussing somebody else talked to him, that you don't need a signature.
Hang on a minute, Kyle. Hang on a minute. Let's talk to 843. 843, why don't you join us? Area code. I guess you're just listening. So anyway, Kyle, I've never known about this type of insurance. I'm unfamiliar with it.
Well, again, this is something that just came up yesterday, strangely enough.
Tell us about it while I go talk to 843.
Well, I don't know a whole lot about that, but I was looking at the web. Can I switch subjects? Are you gone? Well, I don't know if she's still here, but Bruno Mars is going to be playing at the Super Bowl. I just saw it on syndicatednews.net, and I couldn't be more excited. Bruno Mars, come on. Do we not love Bruno? Especially after, I'm glad it's not going to be Miley Cyrus, right? Meanwhile, we'll just sit here and wait for Ruthie to come back politely.
And here's Ernest. Ernest, why don't you join us? Tell us what your opinion is on this.
Oh, I just got in and tuned it in. I was walking around and listening to it at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
But I wasn't trying to, like, I was just listening. I wasn't trying to, like, call in.
No, it's good that you hear. It's always good to hear different opinions. It's very important. Go ahead. Go ahead, Ernest. I said go ahead.
Oh, I'm saying yes, it is. You have to have an opinion in today's world.
Yeah. Anyway, you can relax if you just want to listen. That's perfectly fine. What I wanted to tell you all is that there are cases in all directions, and there are going to be two sides, like in all cases. And one thing that I see in this case is that now it's over, he's been acquitted, yet those attorneys went flying to the scene to make sure they managed things. And where Shelley, who was already in shock and already had been threatened, and remember what he was doing was sitting in the car with his hand on the gun saying, come on, come closer. It's in Spanish, we call it chantajear. And it's when you're teasing someone, threatening and teasing them, like, come on, I dare you, that type of thing. And that's what he was doing. And he was enjoying it, but his friends and relatives, not the ones that they marched into the court, but the friends and relatives and neighbors who know him for this behavior. And if you're always told, don't worry, Dad's going to fix it, you live knowing that Dad's going to fix it. And what a lot of people, you know, didn't really discuss because they didn't want it talked about and they didn't want it out in the open. But the many times that George had difficulty with the law, his father smoothed it over and sealed the records, even to the point where he had already had physical altercations with police. After that, he actually went and applied to become a police officer, and he wrote a letter explaining why it was that he got into a fight with cops, and he put that in his application to be a police officer. And that's after he had been turned down in Manassas, Virginia. He came and applied to be a cop in Sanford, Florida, and doggone it, he wanted to drive around in the police car with the cops. You know, he was enjoying that. And he took everything he learned during that ride and then publicly lambasted the cops, saying that they showed him, you know, their favorite donut place and where they hung out and rested when they didn't want to be seen. It was amazing how he wanted to be in their midst, and then all of a sudden he was their enemy. And the people that worked with him in the various many jobs that he's held, because he has a difficulty not just getting a job because he's charming, but he has a difficulty retaining jobs because he doesn't play well with others. He finds out where the power group is, and then whomever is the minority there, because he doesn't see himself as a minority, he then makes it a point of being the funny man that instigates jokes against that person. And in one case, and in fact, the next time we get together here on Blog Talk Radio, I have that tape. I'm going to play it for you. One co-worker said he was so racist towards me that I was very depressed and I just wanted to leave the job. And the bosses encouraged him not to leave the job, to stay. And he chose to stay, and he chose to participate and give it a try and see if he could work it out. But it was very difficult for him because basically there was no way for him to treat people well. It's a tremendous difficulty. He has a difficulty treating people well, treating people fairly, unless there is some type of advantage or benefit for him. And he's accustomed to being in control.
However, Ruthie, that doesn't have anything to do with the murder of Trayvon Martin. The fact that he's a jerk or he rode around in a police car, the police do offer that as something for the public to be able to do. I do imagine, it's my understanding that Zimmerman had a permit to carry a gun. Who gave him the permit? I realize his father's a judge, but he had a permit to carry a gun. The people in the neighborhood did know about it. At the beginning of this case, it sounded like Zimmerman was not the only individual in his community that was patrolling the neighborhood. It sounded like there were other people also on patrol. It wasn't just Zimmerman. Am I correct?
There were other people, and none of them carried a gun. It was absolutely prohibited.
I think that's been forgotten, but it sounds like what I've heard tonight, that we are forgetting that, and that it sounds like Zimmerman was the only lone zealot out protecting this neighborhood. That to protect the neighborhood and walk about it was fairly normal, gun or no gun. That walking around as a citizen patrol was part and parcel of this subdivision.
Except that he was not part of that organization. He wanted to be, but he was not accepted, again, for the same reason that he wasn't accepted in many established organizations, because he's got a temperament problem. He doesn't play well with others. That did not change where he lived at the Twin Oaks. You're absolutely right, because the parts that they wanted the public to remember, they repeated. It's like a lie. If you tell a lie long enough, after a while people will kind of start thinking that that must be the status quo, when it's actually a lie.
So I'm also,
and that's what spin doctors are for, but these attorneys are really good at it.
I don't remember, and Trayvon Martin was 17, so he, technically was a child. I don't recall him having a spotlessly clean record, which, of course, is no reason to be dead. But how this feels portrayed this evening is that Trayvon was just a child who was just hanging around, minding his own business, and this big scary guy came up with a gun and killed him. And for no reason whatsoever, and Trayvon was just a doll baby. Is that true? So Trayvon did not have a record of any kind, or we're not allowed to know that?
That's public record already.
Okay, I've forgotten.
Yeah, he didn't commit a crime. He was expelled from school for doing stupid things. Stupidity is not a crime.
Well,
he did stupid teenage things.
Zimmerman did stupid things. He hadn't committed a crime before this.
That's another wonderful. I'm so glad you brought that up. That's a wonderful thing that you just said, that he had never committed a crime. That's not true. He faced. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up. That is not true. That was spinning. He committed many crimes, over which he wound up before a judge, because he committed felonies. In order to avoid having those felonies attached to him, he had to do community service, and he had to do all the things that people do when they don't want to do time. And those programs are called diversionary programs. When you take a diversionary program, you are admitting guilt. And that is what George did. And they let you do the probation. They let you sweep up in front of the church and shovel coal and do all sorts of menial tasks and hand manual labor with the idea that you'll get it out of your system, you'll be apologetic, and you'll do community service, and you won't, and be on probation for I don't know how long, whatever time they assign, and that you'll get it out of your system, and you won't do it again because it was so doggone inconvenient. But if you take the diversionary program, you are admitting guilt. And in each case, George had to take the diversionary program rather than do time. And
so with,
the attorney would say, he's never committed any crime. Never. That's not true. He took the diversionary program.
But what Trayvon did were just childish little pranks. I'm telling you, you could be just as dead from a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 17-year-old, as you can from a 29-year-old. Just as dead.
You can walk under a coconut tree here in Florida and have a coconut fall on your head and you would have a brain aneurysm. It's innocent, but it happens, and it happens all the time. It happens often.
I guess the bottom line is,
Zimmerman could happen, that can happen. I'm telling you, Zimmerman had tremendous difficulties of behavior. He had faced the law, and his father always sealed the records. Always.
But I'm assuming, okay, so the jury did not hear every single detail like that because it was
not
sealed.
No, why do you think they want to always conduct the trial a year and a half after the incident? So that most of people's memories will be free of it. They won't remember. And to get a new batch of people that moved in, that moved out. That's
okay,
exactly the case here. After the trial on this. Go ahead.
Was Trayvon in a gang?
No, he wasn't.
So he was not that evening dressed as if he were a gangster.
He was wearing exactly what I wear when I walk in the rain. Exactly.
Which is what?
A hoodie, jeans, and sneakers.
A hoodie, jeans,
exactly.
And sneakers. If I saw a kid, a boy, of any color, in a hoodie, jeans, and sneakers at night, rain or shine, I'd be scared. I'm not carrying a gun, so they're not going to get shot, but I would be afraid that they were going to hurt me.
Well, when you see someone wearing a hoodie, like myself, I'm a lady, I wear a hoodie, I hope people aren't afraid of me.
Well, it might be
to do with fear. If when you feel fear, you have a tendency to run away. He was chasing him. Even after they told him, you don't have to do that. Don't follow him.
I do remember
him.
That.
He did anyway.
Yeah, you're right. I remember that, yeah.
He did it anyway. And that behavior says his relatives and his neighbors that would not come forth, they all say he's a bully. He treats people poorly. And his father will back him up.
Hang on. That's not what I've heard this evening. You're saying they all say he's a bully, and yet you said many of the neighbors stated that he was a great guy that was protecting the neighborhood. So they're split on that, too, in the neighborhood. Is that
no,
not correct?
No, they're not. When it came to orchestrating a string of people that would come in and cry and not call him George, It was like a soap opera. Instead of calling him, referring to him as George, they called him, are you ready? Georgie. He became Georgie, like a diminutive name, like you would call a child. That was very, very planned, very orchestrated. That wasn't coincidental, because nobody calls him Georgie, except his mother, perhaps.
And me. I did in an email to you, but I was...
I remember. But you're going to see a lot of ugly behavior because he's out of the limelight.
And the thing that bothers me is that he was acquitted, and under the law, that means he should be left alone, and he is not, and that's not how it's working. I'm hearing from Aphrodite, I'm hearing from you, applause, that you wish him ill. And
I don't wish him ill. I wish him, he's already ill. I wish him to be treated by a psychiatrist, absolutely, before he kills again. I wish him to be treated. I said from the beginning, when I saw the behavior, I heard the things he said, I said, this man needs treatment. He doesn't need incarceration.
If he needs to have stones thrown at him for the rest of his life over something that he was acquitted for, I can see him becoming a difficult, much more difficult individual than he is. He was acquitted.
I remember in Manhattan, in the subway, when a fella decided that he was going to carry a gun, and when he got mugged, he shot everyone that was mugging him. And he became quite the hero in New York City. But his life changed dramatically because he couldn't establish a normal life after that. When you're involved in a big profile case like this, your life isn't going to be the same unless you keep a low profile and you mind your business. He doesn't want a low profile. While he was in jail every day, he would talk to Shelley about, did you see me on NBC? What about Telemundo? Did you read about me in the Sun Sentinel? Yes, but it was a different article in the other paper, and they would talk about this. This was his only interest. He many times didn't care about anything that was going on in her life. He wanted to know how his press was going. That's serious. And I said many times, he doesn't belong in prison. He needs to be treated. He will likely do this again because he's escalating in behavior in terms of violence.
Well, I think he needs to have the benefit of the doubt. The jury gave him the benefit of the doubt. Ruthie,
okay,
I believe you.
I think that's wonderful, and I agree. I totally agree. I'm not saying that Shelley and her father went looking for him and they annoyed him. I'm talking about Shelley's father's home. He came unannounced. He got into an argument with his wife, whom they're divorcing, and...
Yeah.
It escalated. The argument escalated. Her father got in to defend her, and he punched him in the frame of the nose.
Normal. I think if you pulled right now.
It's not his house.
Shelly's
house.
But he did live there in that house with her as his fate.
But he's no longer, he doesn't have the same status that he had when he was happily married to her.
I understand that. However, it's the beginning of the divorce. And I'm certainly glad that nobody was YouTubing when my ex-husband and I divorced. The first 3 weeks of our divorce, I thank the Lord above that nobody had a camera with YouTube on it way back then. The neighbors are probably still spinning, and that was 30 years ago. I mean, people aren't necessarily civilized in many divorces.
I agree with you. And how he behaves in his house is up to him.
Again, I'm just saying this.
When it's not his home.
A normal, nasty divorce.
And let me finish this sentence. When things did not go his way, he punched his father-in-law in the face.
Allegedly.
No, it wasn't alleged. It was on the 911 call. People aren't going to make something up like that. Neither her father's face wasn't, he wasn't going to do that to his face to make that up. It was one of those quick arguments that family members have. Okay, I'll give you that. That was the time to end it. George can't end it. He's got to be in control of everything and everyone. That's what he's used to. That's what he's used to. And it's hard for him to let go of that. That's what's going on. He can't let that go. Truly.
Well, it's just this one. I agree to disagree. The ambulance did not take the father away and have his nose examined.
Because they asked him not to make a scene. O'Mara showed up, calmed everybody down, and said to Shelley, do you really want to send George to prison? Do you really want him incarcerated?
Do you know what my father would say? My father would say, heck yeah. Most fathers would say, you bet. There'd be no chance my dad would take a punch in the nose with a recent ex-husband who was involved in, regardless of how it turned out, acquittal or not, involved in a murder, and sit back and say, you bet I'm not going to press charges. My father wouldn't do that. Your father wouldn't do that.
We actually don't know. There's no way for us to know. It's too easy for us to say coulda, woulda, shoulda. It's too easy.
Right.
It's
that's what I'm saying. We can't. I don't think we can condemn the guy at this point in time. They're having a snit fit divorce right now. Let's let the Zimmermans have their couple of weeks of being ugly with one another and let it calm down and see what happens then. If Mr. Zimmerman still behaving badly, we're going to know about it real fast, real soon.
Oh, absolutely. But he doesn't want to be out of the limelight. He really got off on that. He enjoyed it tremendously. And he doesn't want to stop that.
Let's hope he takes a cue from Mr. Bobbitt and becomes a wrestler.
Did he become a wrestler, really?
Yes, he did. He sure did. After having porno pictures of the event, the bobbing of the bobbit, as it were.
It was a very hard time. Anyway,
and
Kyle, thank you for calling us and joining us from California.
I'm
grateful.
Happy to check. And I wanted to get one other thing as long as we're talking about criminals who are. And one that's in prison, Scott Peterson here in California, is raising his ugly head again and screaming and upset that, goodness gracious, he feels like he could die in prison.
I thought that was the idea.
Yeah. But he believes the other prisoners don't like him. And he's raising quite the snip. Honestly, I think he's just looking for his... his 30 seconds again in the limelight because people have forgotten who the heck he was. But we in California have not forgotten Scott Peterson, Lacey Peterson, and Baby Connor. So just saying that we certainly do remember the wife and baby he murdered. And I do not wish that now.
Yeah, I don't ever want to forget that either.
And
I don't ever want to forget that either.
California, and with that, this is Kyle Tobin Williams from California on the West Coast, speaking to you on behalf of SyndicatedNews.net, and good evening.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kyle. Thank you.
Well,
that's the lovely Kyle. She's from Carmel, California, and this week she was telling me that it's been quite some time that Mrs. Eastwood has left her home, that they split up almost a year now. They've been separate because Clint Eastwood really didn't want that reality TV show that his wife wanted, and it was just too much to have all of their personal information, I guess, distributed throughout the world by way of reality TV. He hated it. Isn't that right, Kyle?
Well, yes, he did. So Mr. and Mrs. Eastwood are officially split up. Mrs. Eastwood, Dina, she's well-liked here in the community. She's a lovely lady. She contributes much of her time to good works in the area. The TV show was kind of embarrassing for everybody because of her girls, or at least her daughter and Clint's other daughter, two beautiful young ladies. And we're all very happy here in the Monterey Bay area that atrocity is off the air. However, Mrs. Eastwood is an incredibly classy lady, and she's, I understand, dating someone happily from her past, and
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They've moved on then. Yeah, they've moved on. Okay.
Yeah, it's been.
Kyle lives in the beautiful Carmel. In Carmel, wasn't Clint Eastwood once the mayor of Carmel, I thought?
Yeah. I'm actually in the Monterey area, but the Carmel section. Mm-hmm. And I work for Keller Williams at Carmel by the Sea, that quaint little boutique little store area. So I work, my office at Keller Williams Realty is at the Ocean Avenue. Doesn't everybody want to work on Ocean Avenue? Ocean and San Carlos in Carmel by the Sea.
That is lovely. Thank you. Thank you so much, Kyle. I appreciate you.
Yes, and Mr. Eastwood was indeed mayor. So come on down and meet Mr. Eastwood. He's often at the Mission Ranch Inn, which he owns. He no longer owns the Hog's Breath Inn, which he's kind of famous for. There are murals depicted of him as Rowdy Yates on the wall at the Hog's Breath. But he is often to be found playing piano or just hanging out at his Carmel Mission Ranch Inn. Come on down, California.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much, Kyle.
Welcome. Good night.
Good night, dear. He's finding it very difficult to just be a regular person. It's too difficult for him. It doesn't have any panache. It doesn't have any style. And we suffered February, the month that Trayvon Martin was killed, because it began in the community and it spread through the nation and then through the world, that people were not happy that George Zimmerman was free, and they couldn't understand what this stand your ground law is. I keep hoping they'll eradicate it completely, because they apply it in a very unfair manner. I don't see that stand your ground is used fairly. I see people who need stand your ground, and they're not allowed to use it. One woman who's in jail now, I understand, for 20 years, I think she got, was not allowed to use stand your ground because her husband and she had been in a tumultuous relationship for years. So she did what she thought was the rule for stand your ground, which is to shoot in the air a warning shot, and she thought that that would work, and all he did was walk away from his garage. He was in her home. He walked away to the police and said, "She's in there with my children," and she shot a bullet out already, and that was considered attempted murder. And she's the one, he had beat her badly many times, and she's the one who wound up in jail. And that's a case that many attorneys are working on, because it's an absolutely flip-flop way of applying the stand your ground law. Basically, they apply it in the most ridiculous ways. Another case, again, here in Florida, was a man and a woman stopping at a gas station, and they were going into the gas station to buy I don't know what, and a car in the next bank for gas had four or six, I forget how many, teenagers in it, and they were playing very loud rap, and the very large white man told them to turn it off. And the kids would not, and he shot into the car. He just kept shooting at the car as the car took off with the kids. Most of the bullets went into one of the kids, one of the teenagers in the car. And there was a police car right there while all this was happening. And the kids tried to take off. They were being shot at and turned around and came back towards where the police car was. And this fellow who shot into this car, got in his car, left. He was there for a wedding. He left instead, went home, and when he heard his name and his car description on the radio, that's when he decided to turn himself in to the police. The Stand Your Ground law here in Florida doesn't work the way it was meant to. It doesn't work at all. And they've got to change that law. And who was heavily promoting it? The National Rifle Association. The National Rifle Association places a lot of money in politicians' hands. And any politician that goes against them, they'll use that money against the politician. You will never hear a politician bad-mouthing NRA because they're all supported by NRA. And that's a shame. And NRA, by providing so much money to all these politicians, basically gets to control national law. Stop and think about that. They get to control everything. Well, that's plenty. And I'm going to remind you of a long time ago when we went through the experience on February 26th, when we went through the experience of the Trayvon Martin shooting, and we should honor Trayvon Martin, irrespective of what side you're on. He was a teenager. He was a kid. And for that reason alone, we shouldn't forget it. We shouldn't forget when these things happen, because they will happen again and again. And here's a bit of that evening.
911, any police, fire, medical?
Yes, I'm looking out my back townhome and someone's screaming help, and I don't know, I heard like a bang.
Now, you said you live at...
The townhome?
Yes,
and I'm looking out my window, like my backyard, and someone's yelling and screaming, help. And I heard, like a pop noise,
okay.
And they're both still out there right now. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I can tell you right now, you're not the only person that's calling. We already have one officer on scene, another on the way.
Oh, good.
However,
oh, my God, I see the person right now.
I see him walking.
Okay. There's a man coming out. There's people coming out with flashlights. Oh, my God. I don't know what he did to this person.
Was it a male?
I can't see. There's a man walking out with a flashlight right now.
That was making the noise.
Pardon?
Was it a male or female voice that was screaming?
I guess a man. I don't know. The man is up right now. Someone's coming over. I'm glad other people called.
right. We should be out there right
now. I can open my window and hear it if you want me to.
You can still hear it? You can still hear it?
Looking out my window, somebody's over there taking a flashlight. I don't know what's happening. Someone's on the ground.
You see someone laying on the ground?
I don't know. Someone's been shot. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, well, just calm down. Stay on the line with me. Like I said, we have an officer on scene, and we have other officers on the line.
Oh, my God. They better hurry up. I don't know if someone's, like, dead on the ground or something. Oh, my God.
Are they laying down
Well, I look out my back window, and that's like a sidewalk and grass and stuff. Something's really bad, I guess. But there's a man who out here with a flashlight with a man
who is a person
wrestling.
Is this person laying down in the street?
No, see, it's the back of, you can see from my back window, it's only like a sidewalk and a back area.
Okay.
There's people coming over.
So is the person that you see laying down on the street or in the grass?
No, on the grass. Oh, my God. People are coming. I think there's another gentleman with a flashlight. I don't know. Is the police or not? Oh, my God. He shot the person. He just said he shot the person.
Who's saying they shot who?
There's people out there. A guy is raising his hands up. He's saying he shot a person. I think it's a police officer that's with him right now. Oh, my God. Why would he be
killed? It looks like our officer is there. He has somebody at gunpoint.
Yes.
They're gonna handle the situation from here.
Oh my God! Someone's been shot.
It's probably gonna be best if you stay inside your home for the time being, okay?
I know, but I can't believe someone is killed. He was saying help. Why didn't someone come out and help him?
Listen, we don't know if they've been killed, okay? We know they've been, probably.
He just said he shot him. Yes, the person is dead, laying on the grass.
Just because he's laying on the ground doesn't mean he's passed. We have an ambulance on the way as well. We're going to probably pick him up and take him to the hospital.
What is this? I didn't see because it was too dark, and I just heard people screaming, help me, and this person shot him. He was like wrestling with him, you know what I mean, on the ground. From what I could see, it was very dark.
All right.
But I think it's a police officer that's there. I mean, the man didn't try to run away or anything.
And can I get your name, please?
But I don't want to be a witness or anything.
It's okay. I'll leave you as anonymous.
I'm just scared. I mean, I can't even believe that this is a person. Oh, my God. I hope it's a young boy or something. I can't imagine. I've never seen anyone killed. Oh.
Right.
This is like a nice neighborhood. This isn't like, you know, oh my God, I'm too scared to live here.
You don't have to worry right now. We have many officers on the way, and I think about two officers on scene at least right now. So we are on scene, okay?
Oh my God, I see someone killed laying in the grass. Oh my God. I want to know what happened. Why would this man just shoot him?
Once the incident calms down a little bit, you can probably try to ask one of the officers what's going on. But in the meantime, it's probably...
Oh, my God. There comes another, I think, another police officer. It's right outside my window. I mean, it's like 2 feet away. I mean, 5, 10 feet out my window. Oh, my God. Why would somebody kill someone like that?
No, of course, we're not going to know the details.
Oh, I can't look. I mean, the officer is shining the light on the person. He killed someone. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Did you hear or see anything else suspicious before you heard?
No, I was watching my TV, and this is my back window, and then I heard people talking out there, and I was kind of like, oh, gosh, were they, you know, pouring rain? Why would they be outside? I figure walking their dog or something. And then I heard more talking voices, and I didn't open my window. And then I thought, oh, are those two men talking to each other, or they looked like they were wrestling each other? And then I heard the man saying, help, help. I mean, I would have helped if I could have. He's walking. The police officer is bringing the person away that shot him.
All right. stay inside your house for the time being. Once the steam calms down a little bit, you may...
Oh, God. I'm either looking at the person that's dead or just gonna... Oh, God.
If it's going to make you emotional, you may want to just step away from the window for the time being.
Okay. Alright. Okay. Oh, my God. I don't know who to tell. I'm so
busy. Do you have any, if you don't feel like staying alone there, do you have any relatives that you can call that can come over?
No, I don't have any family.
No friends, nothing like that that you can go to?
No, not really, no. I mean, you know, I'm a normal adult person. I used to be a teacher and stuff. Oh, God. I'm sorry, I gotta think of someone to call. I'm sorry, I don't know what to do.
That's okay. Well, like I said, right now, the best thing to do is to probably just stay inside.
Okay.
If it's going to make you emotional, look out the window, then you should probably just...
Yeah, I'm not...
Walk away for now.
I just can't believe it. I mean, I feel like, you know, I...
From what I can see...
I wish I could have done something for the person.
From what I can see, we possibly have the person that's responsible, so you don't have to worry about that for now.
Yes, I know, but I... When someone yells for help, don't you feel like you wish you could have helped them? You know, I mean, I don't have a gun or anything, but, you know. Oh. Sorry.
That's okay. I mean, just remember.
I can't believe I would even imagine anything like this where I live, you know.
Remember, hindsight's 20/20. The whole thing happened too quickly. I mean, you weren't the only one that heard. Like I said earlier, I remember a lot of other people called about it in your neighborhood. So really,
I mean, the people that like are back there. I mean, their porches are right there.
They were probably
like 3 feet. They could have ran out and helped the person. You know.
Well, honestly, calling 911 was the best way to help this man, especially to get the ambulance rolling out there as fast as we could.
Okay, so people called even before I did?
Yeah, we got a bunch of calls all at once. So trust me, a lot of people in your area called. We had an ambulance rolling almost right away, along with police on the way as well. And right now, I can tell you the officers might be out there for a while since they're investigating a serious crime.
You can go down there and say anything.
Well, for now, you might want to just stay in your house, wait for things to calm down a little bit. It's possible they might have an investigator go door to door to see if anyone else might have heard or seen anything else out of the ordinary. So, of course, if you hear a knock at your door and it's an officer, you probably should answer it and talk to them. It might make you feel a little better as well, because they can tell you exactly what's going on in the details and whether or not you should be worried.
Okay, I guess there's a lot of, I hear a lot of cars.
Yeah, there's probably going to be
right now. It's
probably going to be a lot of sirens, but trust me, the sirens will be over soon, and they're probably going to take this guy to the hospital if they feel...
Oh, God, I just heard him say something. Oh, all the cars are out. Outside my house right now, in the front. Sorry, I'm just shaking.
That's okay.
I just blew my mind. I guess maybe I could think of someone to call, a friend or something, to their home.
Yeah, if you have a friend or someone you can call and talk to, that can, you know, pass the time I think that would be a really good idea. But of course, you know, make sure you listen to your door if one of those officers comes up.
I just can't even believe, you know, I just can't believe any, I mean, I'm just, sorry, I just, wow.
Well, it's okay, this isn't something people are dealing with every day. It's okay to be this way.
Well, maybe somebody, if you don't mind saying, maybe somebody could call me. You know, like someone that could explain to me. You know, I've never seen trauma like this. It's almost like a movie.
Now.
Sorry, I'm shaking. I can't stop shaking.
It's normal after something like this, so don't.
Okay. All right. Okay, I better hang up. Oh, my God, I'm sorry. I can't even hold on to the phone with my one hand. It's shaking.
All right, so listen, I think you have the right idea. Maybe call a friend, you know, talk to them a while, pass the time.
Okay.
If you feel like anything's wrong, like if you start feeling a little anxious, or I'm not sure if you have any... I'm not sure if you have any pre-existing medical conditions, but if you're feeling a little off, you know, feel free to call us back. We can always have an ambulance check you out. You know, the EMTs can just come out there and make sure everything's all right.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You feel like shaking. Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'm just shaking. Sorry.
Like I said, it's...
I mean, if somebody wants to call me, that's okay. I don't know. It's just like something like trauma that I can maybe talk to someone later.
We can possibly set that up. We do have someone that's called a victim's advocate that normally responds to people who are involved in these kinds of incidences, but
okay.
Like, I can see if we can make someone get someone to respond out there for you. Do you mind holding on for just a second?
Okay.
Okay.
Well, could you call me back? I don't know who I could call. I'm just trying to think of a friend or someone.
I'm not gonna put you on hold per se, but I gotta go away from the phone for just a second, all right? Because I need to actually get someone.
Sorry,
to
I'm just very.
No, it's okay. actually, I think what would be best is if we were to have an officer meet with you, and then you can speak with the officer about the incident, and then
okay.
If it's necessary, we could also get the victim's advocate to speak to you as well if we page him out there. So I know you live on. Well, but what's your house number?
Yes. Oh God. I mean, I don't know. I don't know any of the circumstances. I'm just like, you just. Yeah, if someone was getting hurt, I just can't believe somebody would shoot someone. Oh, God. Do you want my phone number?
And that's what happened that night, and those phones kept ringing and ringing and ringing. And if I were in any kind of legal trouble, I would absolutely go to Mark O'Mara. O'Mara is clearly quite the spin artist. He's a good attorney, very aggressive, and he's quite the spinner. He showed up in person today at George's father-in-law's house to calm the situation and meet the press, and told the press, oh, there was no gun brandish. No, not at all. Actually, that's not true, because George put his hand on his gun like he's been known to do, and that's a problem because it's a threatening feeling when someone has their hand on their gun, and they're challenging you to come closer. And we played that 911 tape today, and at the end of the tape, everyone that's present is quite shocked that apparently there's an additional woman on the premises. There's a woman, I don't know if she's in the car or behind the house or where, but that's what they're all saying. There's a woman there. I don't know where they were referring to when they kept saying that. I really don't know where they were referring to, but I can find that tape for you. Let me see. Let's start playing it. I think it was at the tail end of the 911 call. Let's see where that is. This is Ruthie from tellme@syndicatednews.net, and joining me is Aphrodite Jones.
Thank you, Ruthie.
Aphrodite, as you recall, you and I got to cover that trial, and we got to sit in what we used to call the syndicated newsroom at the Sanford Criminal Justice Building. And we it was great having met you and working together. And now George gets, he did get acquitted, and now he gets arrested again. Talk to me.
Ruthie, we talked about this off the record back in Sanford, that we really felt that this man was not just a wannabe cop, but really a vigilante and somebody who just couldn't control himself and was out looking for trouble. I believe you and I had a lot of talks about this, and on the air as well, some of it. Here's the proof. What further proof do we need? He's running around threatening his wife and his father-in-law with a gun, and he feels that his manpower comes from gunpowder and that he's some kind of law enforcement. In my opinion, the prosecution overcharged him with second-degree murder. They should have gone for manslaughter, and the jury would have found him guilty of manslaughter. I believe they would have. They were looking for ways to find him guilty of manslaughter. That's why they asked that question about it when they were deliberating. Had the prosecution gone for manslaughter, it would have been lower charge and easier to prove, and then we would not have this guy running around like a madman threatening whomever he well pleases with a gun. It's nuts.
And if you recall, before the trial began, during the hearings, several people came forward, including people he had grown up with, who came to mm-hmm. give the story of who the real George Zimmerman was. And those
right.
interviews were recorded, and they were part of the legal process. And while many new reporters who came at the last minute had never heard those recordings, legitimate reporters who are very professional had never really heard or listened to those testimonies or those reports from people who had worked with him, people who grew up with him, and they are very telling.
Yeah, you're right, Ruthie. And the other thing that is telling that no one really focused on is that his best friend who testified at trial is an U.S. Air Marshal. What does a U.S. Air Marshal do? They go on planes with guns. They're the only people in the world that are around on an airplane with a gun. And that's who encouraged George to get a gun. And that was George's best friend of 5 years. He said so himself. And what do you think that George did all those years with his best friend? Do you think that they didn't talk stories about how cool it is to get on planes and with guns and you know, fight the bad guys? And what? I mean, this was his life. This is why he applied for that ride-along at the Sanford Police Department, which he did, you know, prior to shooting Trayvon Martin. This is why he tried to be a cop in D.C. I mean, his life was all about wanting to be the tough guy, the big kahuna. And nobody looked behind the curtain. You're right. Of the reporters, nobody looked behind that curtain to see that. Even Ruthie, the guy who was his best friend in the world, wrote a book. They interrogated him on the stand, cross-examined him about that book. And in that book, the best friend of Zimmerman says, Zimmerman's account of what happened is that Trayvon grabbed the gun. Well, that's different from what Zimmerman told police. Zimmerman told police he thought Trayvon was going for the gun. So, you know, you have to wonder, why would the best friend get it wrong and then write a book about it and have it in a book in print? I just think that this guy couldn't wait to find somebody to run his venom against. That's just me. It's an opinion. I can't say anything other than the fact that right now, today, with him being arrested for this, I feel as though my point has been well taken. And it's unfortunate because now we have half the population in America really up in arms, and maybe half the population of the world, who knows, with this decision and with what's going on here. I mean,
he pulled a knife on them first, and then when the conversation got worse, then he pulled a gun on Shelley Zimmerman and her father as well.
Well, and here's the other thing, Ruthie, that's weird. When I say half the population, I find it strange that I still get a lot of feedback from people that tell me that George Zimmerman was a good guy and he was protecting the neighborhood. And it was unfortunate that he, Trayvon, hit him and he defended himself. There's still a lot of people out there that believe that.
Yeah, yes,
I mean,
yes.
A lot of people.
Yes.
And I just don't know how they can believe it. If they were sitting in the courtroom and they were watching what we watched and they saw the evidence that the defense attorneys fought to keep out of in front of the jury, and if they saw and they understood what was behind this man, as you say, that the history of this guy, he is not a stable person. And he was looking for trouble. And somehow half the country has got it twisted around, and the jury got it twisted around that Trayvon asked for trouble, that Trayvon was the one who somehow was, no, I believe Trayvon was defending himself. I believe that when Zimmerman said that he said to Trayvon, came up to him and said, "What's your problem, MF?" And Zimmerman turned back and said, "I don't have a problem." And then he said, "I started reaching in my pocket for my phone." What do you think that kid thought he was reaching for, a phone or a gun? And what do we know what he was actually reaching for? I'm sure he's going to punch George Zimmerman if he sees that this guy's been following him around, chasing him around, and now he's reaching in his pocket. He's going to let him reach in his pocket for what is a gun?
I also do not believe it. In any case, now it's time for us to revisit those recordings from the people who grew up with him and the people that he hurt in one way or another. Now we've got to revisit those recordings because
this is
the state of Florida, and you know that in the state of Florida we have the Sunshine Law. We don't hide anything. So we will here at Syndicated News be airing those recordings. And as you know, we have Shelley Zimmerman's entire divorce document. It's right here on syndicatednews.net. And we will have today's arrest and all of that record. And we will be talking about this on Blog Talk Radio and on Syndicated News.
I do have a function. I'm not sure how long it'll go.
Gossip. Dish. What function is it, and who's going to be there? I hear Suzanne Lucci is going to be there. Who else?
Suzanne Lucci and Paula Gunn and a whole bunch of women from the ID Network, and also Glamour Magazine is throwing this event. So it's a victims advocate event, actually.
Where are you going to be? Do you live in New York City now?
I do live between New York and Florida.
That's right. You did tell us that. That's right. Okay, then. Thank you so much for your courtesy and your grace, as always. I think it's interesting to have your opinion and his people that grew up with him and people that worked with him, because that database was closed since the case was – there was an acquittal, and the case was – it's over. It was over. But I have those recordings. I have them all.
I can't wait to hear them. I can't wait to hear them.
And then when you hear these recordings, you're going to say, "Oh, my God." And I'll tell you why. Because while they're not about murder, and let's face it, you can't use material that's not a propensity of that crime, since they're not about murder.
Right.
But these are unrelated because they were mostly about George Zimmerman's bullying. He is a master bully.
He's a bully, and that was the thing. He thought he was protecting the neighborhood. He wanted to be a hero, and he was going to do that by what? Killing somebody?
Well, don't forget, recently in Florida, we had a fellow that shot his wife and uploaded the picture of his dead wife to Facebook.
Yes, how disgusting. I mean, crazy. Also crazy, and really, I mean, that's just... I don't even have a response for that.
I spoke to his neighbors, and guess what his neighbors said? His name is Derek Medina. He shot his wife, Jennifer Alfonso, and he uploaded her photo to Facebook. And everyone was blurring it out and pixelating it, and I didn't do that. First of all, because this wasn't a horrific crime.
He didn't dismember her. It was just
no,
a photo.
No, exactly. Yeah. And she actually fell back. I use the photo as it was because I want people to see what real murder looks like and stop babying themselves. They have no problem watching gore and dismemberment in what they call teenage action movies, but then they have a problem seeing it on the news. But they have no problem seeing 60 children on a pile that were just killed with sarin gas in Syria, there's no problem looking at that, but they have a problem looking at a dead person because it's a dead person. That's nonsense. And you know what will happen? A year and a half will go by before it's time for Derek Medina to have his trial, and a lot of people will have forgotten that he did that.
Well, let's hope not. Because,
well, we're going to keep that picture at Syndicated News so that people can remember her and not just throw it under the rug and say, oh, yes, he killed her, put her picture on Facebook. He did it. Don't forget it.
Don't forget it, and don't forget that he was proud of it. And that is
his neighbors said that he was always walking around with a gun in his waist belt because he felt that he was patrolling the neighborhood and keeping them all safe.
I knew you would come right back to Zimmerman, and there you have it.
And I said, sir, would you repeat that? And he repeated it. He said, for years he's been living here, all the while he's been living here, he walks around with a gun in his waistband, and he's always pulling up his shirt, letting people know he's got a gun there, and he's always calling himself the private neighborhood watchman, and he's always walking around and prowling at 2 and 3 in the morning with the gun in his waistband.
And here's the other thing, Ruthie, that I don't understand. People actually believe that somehow Zimmerman was an appointed watchman and that he was had a job as a watchman. No, he was self-appointed.
Self-appointed, and so was this fella in Miami.
Well, he wasn't voted into office by anybody.
No, not at all.
People have the impression that this man was chosen to be the watchdog. No, he chose himself, Zimmerman.
He appointed himself, and so did the fella, Derek Medina, that killed his wife, Jennifer Alfonso, in Miami. Same circumstance. Both of them
unbelievable.
Were self-appointed. Both of them carried guns.
But what Zimmerman did and then faced a jury and walked away, that is a travesty, my opinion.
Anyway, thank you, Aphrodite. It's always wonderful having you on Syndicated News.
This is Aphrodite Jones, and I'm here on syndicatednews.net.
We're not sure who the aggressor is. We don't know if there even is an aggressor, per se. And right now, we're just trying to get all of our ducks in a row and figure out what we got.
Okay, and will you be releasing a statement later in the day?
Yes.
Thank you. And this is Officer Hudson?
Yes, it is.
From the Lake Mary, Florida Police Department.
Yep.
And are you in public information?
Yep, I'm CIO.
911, do you need police, fire, medical?
This is some officer.
Are you police?
Road.
All right, we do have units en route to you, ma'am. Is he still there?
Yes, he is, and he's trying to shut the garage door on me.
Is he inside now?
No, he's in his car, and he continually has his hand on his gun, and he keeps saying, step closer. He's just threatening all of us with,
step closer
with his firearms. And he's going to shoot us.
Okay.
He punched my dad in the nose. My dad has a mark on his face. I saw his glasses were on the floor. He accosted my father and then took my iPad out of my hand and smashed it and cut it with a pocket knife. And there's a Lake Mary city worker across the street that I believe saw almost all of it.
Okay.
He's sitting in a truck right now. He just showed up here, but my phone died, so I had to call you from my father's phone.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. I was trying to get you back, and it kept going to voicemail.
Yeah.
All right.
But I'm really, really
afraid. Have units in the area where you're at, okay? So just stay on the line with me.
Okay. Okay. I don't know what he's capable of. I'm really, really scared.
All right, there are multiple units in the area. All right. This is, you
okay.
said this is Shelly, right? What's your phone number that you're calling on now?
Yeah. Oh, the police are here.
Yeah, what is Zimmerman doing right now?
He's in his truck. There's police here with their weapons.
Does he see them?
I'm sorry?
Does he see them?
Yeah, they're telling his bodyguard to get out of the way. Oh, my God. Dad, get behind a car or something. I don't know if he's going to start shooting at us or not.
Are you guys outside right now?
Yes, we are. And the police have their weapons. Dad, get inside the house. Doors might start shooting.
shooting at us. I don't know. We're going inside the house.
Okay, go back inside.
Oh my God.
Are you guys both inside now?
Yes.
Okay, stay in there, okay? Let the police take care of it.
Okay. He's got his hands in the air. He's not touching his weapon.
Okay. Okay. Is
he's
your is
out
your
of
father need medical?
Like. Dad, do you need medical? He says no, but I think he does. He does need medical. He's shaken. He said he feels like he's going to have a heart attack. His nose. Yes, you do, because your nose looks like it's all, it could be broken. I think he should have a medical, if we can have an ambulance come.
Sure. They will have to stay. They won't be able to approach until the situation outside is secured, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Okay. You guys are safe inside, correct?
Yes.
Shelly, you're doing really good, okay? This is a tough situation for anyone. All right? Let's stay on the line with you, all right? Until our units can speak with you, all right?
Okay.
All right, are you okay? You said he did take something out of your hand. Do you need medical as well?
I don't think so. Maybe just shock.
Okay. All right, I'm going to go ahead and get FC to respond, okay?
Okay. Dad, get inside right now.
Make sure he stays inside. Until someone comes and lets you guys know it's okay for you to step out, stay inside.
Okay.
We're getting up on the line to come to you, all right? But like I said, they can't come up to check out your father until they secure the scene, okay?
Okay. Hold on one second.
Okay, Shelly, take a couple deep breaths for me, all right?
Someone's in there?
Excuse me?
There's a woman in there. Oh, my God.
Oh, my.
Shelly?
Like Mary to Charlie 10. Are you 1025 with the complainant?
Isn't that fascinating? That is fascinating. There's a woman in there, and I don't know what they mean. Do they mean there's a woman in the car or by the garage or where? And here is our vice president of marketing. Cassie, are you with us?
I am here.
Welcome.
Good evening.
Welcome to Syndicated News. So you're always working, and you so infrequently visit the studio. Thank you so much. Did you hear that? There's a woman in there. Where do you suppose the woman was?
I'm guessing in the truck. I mean,
that's
just
what I
looking
said
at the
too.
Pictures, looking at his pictures with respect to when he's been pulled over. The numerous times, he looks like he has some tinted windows. So
he does.
In that respect, they wouldn't really notice initially if the windows are tinted and the doors are closed, if there's another person in the vehicle until the police department or the police officers, if you will, as they were securing the scene, naturally are going to secure the vehicle.
And they're going to get her out of the car.
Exactly.
That's when they notice it was a woman in the car.
Mm-hmm. And that takes a lot of courage, and I wouldn't even say courage. I would say, I can only apply my thought process to this right now as this is something that George would do, is just based on his personality and how he has, it's clearly evident, a lack of respect. He's at his father-in-law's home. obviously discussing something.
Not his house. It's
right.
Not his house. But look
correct.
At how he's behaving in somebody else's house.
And
Jackie, I know
there.
You're listening. Jackie, are you listening? Jackie, are you listening in?
Yes.
I know you're there. I know you're listening. Let me know when you're going to jump in here. Now, the thing that I'm going to play for all of us, because I talk about this regularly, but because I wanted to be fair to George, I didn't play this tape because I don't want people to get a bad impression of him or his behavior. But he put that out today. Now he's making his behavior public, so I don't have to be private anymore. And I'm going to play for you what happened at one of his jobs, and I want you to hear how racism can be very tricky, and it goes around the bend. And here it is. This is someone that worked with him that spoke to the authorities about George's bullying. And here it goes. And depending on what part of the room you're in, ethnically, will determine how you react to this tape. Here it is.
Today's date is March 22nd. The time is approximately 9:20 a.m. The person being interviewed is that correct? That person conducting the interview is Investigator Vaudry of the State Attorney's Office. The interview is taking place at the State Attorney's Office. Would you just state your full name for the record, please? Okay. Would you raise your right hand for me, please? You solemnly swear or affirm that the statement you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay. Let me first start by asking you, do you know a gentleman by the name of George Zimmerman?
Yes.
And how do you know George Zimmerman?
We used to work together.
Right? And at what time period were you employed by...
Approximately 2008, for about a year, year and a half maximum, probably mid 2009, I would say.
Okay. So do you remember your employment dates that you were there?
No, but I can look it up.
Okay, that's okay. So you say from maybe the beginning of 2008 until mid 2009?
Probably March or April of 2009. I was there for like a year and a few months.
Okay. And at that time, was George Zimmerman employed there?
No, he was employed the first few months.
Okay, the first few
months.
When
I started there, he was already an employee there.
Okay, and you had some issues with him while you were employed there?
Yes.
Okay. Can you describe those issues for me?
There was multiple occasions. I was new to that environment, and a lot of people did not really like me when I first got in for many reasons. Sales floor was very slow. And I got in with some experience, so I did well right away. Of course, the fact that I'm Middle Eastern, that's normal. I'm used to that. So a lot of that environment in there was very close. They were, you know, friends together. Didn't welcome me very well. All the employees over there had their own little groups.
Right.
And he was probably there like a few months before I was, but he managed to get in that group, and when he noticed that other employees didn't like me when I was doing, you know, when I started there, he chose me as that target to start
okay.
to gain their trust, that they gained to be in their group and to be, you know, cool within the guys. He chose me because I was the new guy and didn't really like me, so he chose me to bully me, and he started out with a stupid incident.
Okay, so you described him as a bully?
Yes.
Okay. Can you describe some of those instances where you felt like he was bullying you?
There was a lot of incidents, but the major incident that he just didn't stop, and he kept going and going and going on it. One day I was leaving, and again, being a yellow tag, they have mentor programs where someone else would teach you how to do your job pretty much, because that's how they do their training.
Okay, you mentioned a yellow tag. A yellow tag is a person who is newly employed.
Correct.
Correct. Okay.
So, my mentor pretty much told me that George has already, you know, he was new not too long ago, but now he caught on to it really fast. So if you have any questions, you just ask me or ask George. That's what my mentor told me previously. So I trusted this George. He looked like a very nice guy. People liked him a lot over there. He's got great one face, but I didn't see the other face that later on. And he gave me directions how to when we lock up, we put two chairs in every office, and we turn on. You have this section to turn on all these TV, all the computer screens, and all these cubicles. Put two seats in every office, and then, you know, make sure there's no trash. So I went ahead and did that. Being a new guy, I went out, and he's like, "Oh, did you take the trash out in all these six offices?" I'm like, "No, I didn't." He's like, "Oh, you're supposed to take the trash out in your offices." Like, that doesn't make sense. No, you know what? I'm just not gonna do that. Next day, he grabbed every employee in the place, explained to them how a fucking moron I am of listening to him and doing exactly what he told me. Well, I told him to do this, and he went ahead and did it. And I told him to take out the trash, and he took out the trash.
So he told you to perform a task or a job assignment that you really weren't supposed to do.
Exactly.
It was like a practical joke.
Exactly. It was a joke. But he didn't laugh at him in my face. He was laughing with every employee. I mean, he went to the service department, talked to God knows how many people about it individually, because these people are busy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Every manager, everybody in the store were just laughing at this joke. And then the funniest thing is, to them, what annoyed me, that in these stories, I was portrayed like the, I don't know if you ever watched comedy, this guy is called Ahmed the Terrorist.
No.
Okay, so it's this little guy, he's got this weird voice and some, that was me in the story. So the story turned my accent to, "No, I kill you."
Okay.
And he kept going and going and going at it. Try to ignore it. It was like middle school, high school humor, but it was going on and on for days and days. You can't walk into the lunchroom without somebody saying something within these lines of that comedian or that comedy show that I was telling you about.
And you handed me a letter. I'm going to show it to you. It's a letter dated Tuesday, July 8th, 2008.
Correct.
And it's a letter to...
That's correct.
And with your name printed, it's a typewritten letter.
Yes.
Do you recognize this letter?
Yes, I typed this letter.
You authored this letter?
Yes.
Okay, would you mind just initialing and dating today's date?
Sure. Today is?
Today is the 22nd.
22nd,
2012. Okay.
And I handed this to Human Resources, the person that was responsible, Human Resources back then, her name was... got on top of my head.
But you submitted this letter to as a complaint against George Zimmerman.
Yes. At first, before I did this, I went to a manager and I complained to him, and he said, "Oh, he's just playing with you." No, he's not playing with me. It's been going on for so many days that I had violent thoughts against him. I don't care at that point if it would cost me my job, because that was extremely, like, middle school kind of. Or high school kind of bullying that was just going on and on and on. And it was hard enough for me to fit in this environment. And this guy's making it harder and harder.
Right.
I mean, there's so many incidents about, I'll be walking by and he'll be with his friends and he'll say in very loud voice, he'll say, "Oh, you know how, you know, yellow tag stupid guys are. They're just stupid. They're just..." He said this term so many times, that's why I wrote it down.
Okay, you can read it.
Yeah, fucking moron.
Okay, so he would refer to you as a fucking moron because you were the new guy.
Yeah. So he started leading these comedy shows in the lunchroom. And he'll have all the employees in there. He'll start telling the story or anything that I did with any customer. You know, if he heard it, my voice in this story will be like that Ahmed the Terrorist. And the terms would be all including bombing, "I'll kill you, I'll kill your family," you know, all the jokes about Middle Eastern stuff. And then other guys were approaching me, especially older men in that place. Be like, "Omar, you know, don't listen to these guys. They're idiots, they're young, they're stupid. You're such a nice guy. Please don't get that to influence you, just let you know that we like you, you're a good guy. And I heard that from a couple of employees that approached me and told me that, to a point I'm like, what's going on in the lunchroom?
Okay, so when he would relate these stories to other employees, would he use that Middle Eastern accent and use these terms of, about terrorists? And did you feel that was some form of racism or bias towards you?
Okay. Yes, yes. I more than that, I think it was more because I was an easy target for him to belong to this group.
Okay.
That was more important than anything else. I mean, be honest with you. I mean, if this was all Middle Eastern environment, he would be with us making fun of the new Asian guy.
Okay, so you don't feel like he singled you out. It was more like he was trying to fit in with the clique.
Exactly.
So you were
the new guy.
You were the new guy.
Like,
you were just
exactly.
the target.
Yes.
Make himself look good.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
That's why, you know, as you see in my letter, that I pretty much indicate that this is a high school like humor.
Right. You know, it's more immature.
Exactly.
Immature,
it was so immature.
Behavior.
With that, I had to lay down the all the, you know, cost benefits of really beating this guy up to teach him a lesson. And then at the end, after this took on good period of time. It's been 4 years, but I'm pretty sure it was longer than 2 weeks of anger that I, you know, took in my heart, that I had to go home, think about it, have a few bottles of wine to think about what I'm going to do. And then that was the first approach I did, and I wasn't very satisfied with the results. They sat down with him. They had a talk with him.
You say they, is this...
Yes, a couple of managers sat down. They sat down with me first, asked me to bring this letter, the same letter you have in front of me, and I handed them this letter, and then they asked me the story again. I told them the story and all the incidents, and they were asking me, oh, don't you think he was just playing with you? And I'm like, no, I know if somebody's playing with me. You know, if somebody's playing with me, when we walk back, let's say, in the hallway, he won't give you that dirty look like, I hate you. You know, if you're joking with me, you go by me, say, hi, man, what's going on? Hey.
Right.
When 9/11 happened, I was in Evansville, Indiana. So I my tolerance as far as jokes or big humor, mm-hmm. as far as that, it's very high. Trust me. But that's it.
Okay. Did at any point during your interactions with George, did he ever threaten you?
No.
With any violence? Did he ever put his hands on you in any violent manner?
No. No, he did not.
It was what you described and what you've written is, but is more like even what how you described just this immature, you know,
yes.
behavior.
Yes,
but it had some racial overtone
yes.
to it because
yes.
of your heritage.
Yes, it would have again. It would have been anything that these other employees didn't like or if it didn't fit in. Like my friends were asking me, what do you think about this case? I don't know if I'm supposed to even say this or not. But my input on it, if the victim was, say, 30 years old and he was 250 pounds, he wouldn't approach him. That's mm-hmm. the kind of guy he is. He approached me. He picked on me. A few months after I got hired, there was a guy who just came back from the military, and they hired him. He never messed with him. He was, because the guys liked him. He was the coolest guy in the clique. But no, this new Middle Eastern guy, nobody likes. I outsold most of the floor within a very short period of time, and that was a reason or part of why, you know, I wasn't very welcome in that area. A year later, till I made, you know, I was friends with everybody in there.
We wanted to stop the tape because we just wanted to see, we wanted to share with you what we call propensity of behavior. And Cassie, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have to agree with the gentleman when he says it's middle school, basically elementary, middle school, kindergarten type of behavior, and bullying at its finest. Now, bullying is a whole, it's a very broad topic, and you can be bullied in your own home, you can be bullied in school, and unfortunately, it happens in the workplace as well. And in my thought process with respect to if we would like to cover racism with involving this gentleman, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I'm sorry?
He's Middle Eastern.
Yeah. So in this respect, it's I don't understand how the company could even allow this, even as a quote-unquote joke. It's really unacceptable, and I'm sure that company policy states it, so I'm curious as to why there wasn't a lawsuit. How was this brushed underneath the rug? And that's this conversation right here is going to open another ball of wax for that business. And, you know, hopefully they will, you know, focus on not being having this behavior be acceptable in their business. It's unacceptable everywhere. It should be a no-tolerance policy, clearly across the board, like stopping at a stop sign. You stop at
he
a stop
even
sign.
He even says, later on in the tape, he even says, when George went to the supervisor and spoke to the supervisor, I actually believed that maybe it was me that was making bringing a problem for myself, and that it was me. Maybe it was all in my head, because he was so convincing. And the guy explains it so well. George was so convincing that he even began to doubt himself. And to avoid these types of bullying problems, the company installed an anonymous 800 number where if you worked there and you were an employee and you saw something out of place, you could pick up that 800 number and call the main office, the corporate office, and basically file your complaint. Well, they actually had to get rid of that 800 number, and eventually they did fire George because he was constantly calling that number, complaining about everything, especially the boss, saying to the corporate management that the boss didn't know how to do his job, that he could do it better, and it was such an annoyance that they finally let him go for that. And this co-worker says, I remember I had already left that job and been promoted to something else, and I threw a party at my house. That's how happy he was, because he couldn't believe that he could be bullied that long. And yes, many companies, the status quo, will say, oh, that's nothing. Stop being such a big baby. Mm-hmm. That does happen because they don't want to deal with it. What about today's betrayal? Because this gal, stuck by her husband, did the right thing according to his family. Let's face it, I don't care what goes on with George Zimmerman, his sisters, or even Shelley. They have a judge in that family, and mm-hmm. I don't think that anything that goes on or that is done by any of them is not first approved of or not approved of by the judge, because there's a judge living in that family who's got tremendous experience with law.
Well, and here's my opinion on that, and, you know, we're all entitled to our opinions, so I can, you know, talk from personal experience, you know, on my end. As, you know, a wife and a daughter-in-law, a sister-in-law, so forth and so on, the family dynamic and political dynamic that comes within a family that's larger or that has a family where the patriarch is extremely strong and strict. There is a certain following. First off, the children have to follow the way that the family was raised, really, in that the patriarch stands.
Yeah.
That's the rule. It's more of a family code, if you will. I could see this happening in the court just by watching the trial every day, the body language, the behavior. No, I'm no expert, but it was clearly evident. With the history, the conversations, the recorded tapes that I've heard while George was in jail, between himself and his mother and his sister, and his wife even. So, I mean, these are things that are found on the internet and things that we have in our repertoire, because that's what we do. So in that respect, you come to learn certain behaviors and traits, and you can tell certain tones and voices and so forth and so on that just reverberate. And when you have George's father writing a book about certain topics. You can see by the way his father has handled himself just post, you know, post-trial and the verbiage and content, that how it's reverberated. You can see that through George's lifetime and even through Robert's. You can see that through Robert as well. There's a certain, if you look at the dynamic between the two of Robert and George, you can see how they have a certain level of I don't care-ness, if you will. I'm here to speak and you will listen. If you don't listen, I will make you listen. That's where they get that from their father. That's something you learn at home. Everything begins at home.
I agree.
You know, with respect to Dad being such a powerful person in this, in George's life and in his upbringing and Robert's as well, that sets a certain amount of, and it happens within any family. I mean, we see it all day long, so-and-so is this and so is doing that. But people tend to have a little bit more leniency because of the fact that, you know, they have a, they're a high-profile family, if you will, in their town, city, and what have you. So with that being said, and I personally can relate to this because of my family and what my family, just being part of my family, brings. And it's something, it's a responsibility that I teach my children. It's a responsibility that you have to not step out of the boundaries and think that because of who you are, you have certain doors opened for you. No. And the way that I teach my children in today's society is because of who you are, you have to open the door and really walk through it. But you have a higher level of responsibility being in the public or just being online and Twitter and the Facebooks. You have more of a responsibility to be conscious about the way that you treat others and things that you say, because they do reverberate and it is a reflection on who you really are on the inside, and eventually this stuff will catch up with you as it's catching up with George now. Everything, his big picture, is now plummeted. It's obvious. And so for this, I mean, on Shelley, from Shelley's standpoint, if I were to put myself in Shelley's shoes, as a wife and, again, a daughter-in-law or a sister-in-law or a mom in that respect, if you will, I personally know that when you are in the throes of the moment in a conversation and, you know, there's a lot of angst going back and forth. And in George and Shelley's case, there have been divorce papers filed recently. So, that you know, their tension is escalated, okay? And he doesn't feel that he, you know, should have anything. I'm sure there's constant battling back and forth about what Shelley will get, what she won't get, and the amount of threats that I can only imagine that she's had to endure over the last week. Just verbal.
I think she'll wind up with nothing. I think she will wind up with nothing because they have no children. They have to, and I couldn't believe it. She put in her divorce papers that she wanted her dogs.
Well, pets are like family, and many people will, you know, in even in our world, in our, you know, in our family dynamic, we have animals, and they are. They are part of our family. They, you know, if something happens with them, we all feel it, and that's, you know, that I can understand where she's coming from. And so in that respect, I mean, and many people will share that stance, is that they are, you know, it's not just a dog. It's their family. It's part of, it's their, to them, it might be their children. And that's okay. If that's, you know, she's, there are, I have seen such things on the internet that there are battles over pet custody. There really are. And keeping that in mind, you know, they're going to be down to bickering over anything and everything just because she did follow the family code. She did go to trial. She was there, you know, next to her husband's side. She did take an enormous amount of ridicule. She had, you know, made decisions that no doubt were discussed within the family dynamic to, you know, an effort to keep the focus more on her versus the family. And that's very unfortunate, but it does happen. And, again, I've been part of a very strong family dynamic with respect to my husband's side of his family. And in hindsight, when you're looking and you've been through all of this stuff, as Shelley has been, with her husband, his family, and, you know, the ridicule and the, everything having to be so locked down because you can't talk to anyone, and it's I can only imagine it to be very devastating. Now, with that being said, to have to know that your husband has just escaped the fate of potentially being in jail for eons of years, okay, and being declared a murderer, if you will, and having to pick up the phone in the throes of a moment and to have to dial 911. At first, having been there, at first you feel, oh, I am calling the police because I have the superior authority. I have the phone in my hand, and that's what I'm doing, right? But there's a certain threshold that has to be reached in effort to make that call, just as a human being. Now, what she must have felt when she realized that the police are there, and I can tell through the 911 call, having, you know, just experienced something like that, very similar in my end. So when you dial the 911 call and you're there and it's, hey, I have the phone in my hand, they're going to come because you are being unruly, and, you know, the threats and the comments and a threat is, it can be very general and can be very basic and can be very broad, you know, and that's the thing, too, that a lot of people don't really understand what a threat is. So with that being said, then you can hear on the 911 call how she just breaks down because it really hit her. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It hits you emotionally, socially, in every way.
Yes, and everything just came tumbling down as around her. You could tell by the way she started to cry that, oh, my goodness, I just called 911. The police, they have his hands up in the air. I'm looking at this. This is at my hand. No matter what, this is my husband right now. No matter what, this is my husband. And what she must have been feeling, and I can feel for her, because at that
point, awful. When you, yeah.
It's a very, you feel as though you're violated. You have been violated and pushed to a point to where you had to make that call. But again, as she said, I don't know what he's capable of. Those are very serious words.
She's frightened. She was clearly afraid of him.
Absolutely. And then when you go into toward the end of the call, again, with the tinted windows of the vehicle, and is there a woman in there?
That
That's
was fascinating, wasn't it? That fascinated me.
Well, as again, a wife and just a human being.
Mm-hmm.
When you have to, just to put myself in her shoes, if you will, or asking anyone else to, here she is, she's on the phone, she's already shocked at the fact that, oh my goodness, I just placed this call, the chances of him going to jail at my hand are extensively real. Okay, so she's just, that's just settling in her whole entire system. She's crying, she's upset, she's hurt, and she's hurt at the fact that she had to even go there, amongst other things in her heart and her soul. Then, so the sense of violation's there already, and this is within a, what, 3-5 minute time frame. Then
yeah.
Have your whole entire world rocked by having your husband threatening you while another woman is in his vehicle. That, I mean, having another woman so soon and bringing her to your father-in-law's home where your wife is just, you know, I do feel for her because I would imagine that her whole entire night has been a mixed bag of emotions, and you know, he's moving on clearly, quickly. They're not even divorced, which is, you know, that's, I guess that's today's society. And, you know, in my world, I still have never gotten past that sort of betrayal, ever. And I don't think that, I mean, forgiving and forgetting, there's that saying, forgiving, you know, that will happen, forgetting never. And so in her case, it's on 911 call. It's
and
on
I want to warn husbands and wives who are in the throes of divorce, try to do it in as civil a manner as you can. And don't, as Judge Michelle LaRance says, she's one of the hosts to Family Matters here at Syndicated News, as she says, don't hate your husband or wife more than you love your children.
Exactly.
Everything you're saying and everything you're doing, that child is absorbing it like a sponge. And you are doing tremendous damage to those children who are witnessing it. But worse, by coincidence, you could be displaying this horrific behavior within earshot of a mandatory reporter, such as a policeman or a fireman or a teacher or a nurse or any other, say, counseling professional, a psychologist. And you might be thinking that you're going to tell your spouse to go do whatever to themselves or use whatever vulgarity you want and thinking, well, what do I care? This is Denny's. But you just said it in front of a social worker who heard and with her eyeballs watched you say that in front of your 7-year-old, which legally is child abuse. And you don't even have to know that social worker because she's having her pancakes in the next table and she doesn't know you from Adam. And guess what? She now has to report you to the state child abuse hotline. And in many cases, people who are not working in the capacity of teachers like myself, I don't have to conduct myself as a teacher because I'm not actively teaching.
Right.
But I'm still a mandatory reporter. And if I hear child abuse, I have to report it. I don't even have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You're
held liable.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Is this Jackie? Who's here at 404 area code?
Yes.
Pardon?
Yes.
Jackie, we're talking with the Vice President of Marketing, Cassandra. We call her Cassie Arnaz. And she was giving us a wonderful explanation of the viewpoint of what's going on between Shelley Zimmerman and George. What say you?
I'm sorry, I don't have an opinion. I missed part of the conversation.
You just like to listen. You still just want to listen, right? That's okay.
Yes.
That's okay. We're glad you're here. That's okay.
And
I saw your number and I
got disconnected when you were playing the call with the police interview.
Okay, I'll make sure that we don't touch anything so we don't disconnect you. Okay, you can sit there and enjoy your cup of coffee or whatever and join us. We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
Okay, here we go. So, Cassie.
Yes.
What do you say?
Well, this is going to be interesting. I have to agree with Aphrodite. And, you know, during the trial, I know that you and she spoke several times about their, you know, the opinions and how it could go and, you know, what's going to happen next. And it's very sad to hear it when you follow on Twitter or on Facebook, when you see the comments when it, you know, after the verdict was announced. And, you can see, you know, many people in just online, in the virtual arena, if you will, just saying he's not going to be happy until he either, you know, kills himself or somebody else or is back in jail for a life sentence of some sort. This is not going to stop. And
he liked being in the limelight. And the minute he was out of the limelight, he became very, very upset. Because he sees, and you can see when you look at the film as the squad car is coming up behind his car, you can see that the minute George sees a squad car, then he steps on the gas. So he wants to be caught. He wants to be stopped. He wants to be on national TV. He gets a kick out of this. And I remember hours and hours of jailhouse conversations that he had with his wife. He was basically asking her, did you see me on this newspaper? Did you see me on that show? What about that show? And I couldn't believe the way he spoke. He spoke like one of those kids in a reality show. He didn't see the seriousness of what had happened. You killed a kid, man.
Yeah.
And I remember always thinking, I wish I could grab him by the shoulders and just shake him and say, wake up, look at this, this is serious. But, of course, that's in our imagination. You can't do that. And I noticed what a great attorney. Mark O'Mara is a heck of an attorney. He showed up today, and he was like a public relations specialist. He has so much credibility now that he played it to the max. Oh, everything's fine here. It's just, and now what is he telling the press? He's making it like it was a nothing incident. By creating it, getting reporters convinced to use the expression, he said, she said.
Oh, well, you know, and that,
it would be
that might be so.
That if both of them had guns. He's the only one with a gun today.
He's the only one with a gun. He's also the one with the knife. And, you know, the beautiful thing about DNA, as George should already know, is that when you touch something, you leave your prints, unless you have gloves on, okay? And in Shelley's 911 call, you hear her say, he took the iPad out of my hand, broke it, and cut it with the knife in his pocket.
That's right.
Okay. So if it's a she said, she
said. Isn't
it funny?
That scared the hell out of me when I heard that. And you pointed it out now as well. Why is that? Why is it that we both were so alarmed by that one piece of information, that he cut the iPad with a knife? Why did that? Why is that memorable to you? Because that's something that really frightened me.
In my perspective is that he's that angry. He was that close to her, one. He was that angry. And whatever it is that, you know, she was either doing or looking to show him, he was having none of that. He will not be told, like you said. And, you know, to him, it seems as though the divorce in the papers is a joke. And just as many other things that have happened within the last year, a couple years to him have been. And just his character, you know, the smirks, the, you know, his comments and, you know, reverberating choice words through family, individuals. You know, there's certain things that you can see. Again, it all begins at home. It's reverberating through the children. They're carrying themselves the way that, you know, they have basically had the opportunity to be able to carry themselves is that, you know what, my dad's a judge. And so what do you think you're going to do? My dad's a judge. There is
exactly.
A certain... Yeah.
I remember in court, O'Mara used to enjoy saying, he's never had a felony against him. That's not true. Sure. He had several. His father would seal the records and get him to plead no contest and go ahead and do the
community service.
community service and all of that stuff to appease, but he most certainly had felonies against him for getting into fights with cops, for instance, interfering with police officers who were on the job. And it was his father, the judge, who fixed it. And that is something that George is used to. And I remember when I was covering the Natalie Holloway case, that Joran Vandersloot had a father who was also a judge.
Correct.
And he was also an entitled son. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating. I sat with the videos of both fathers and I played them side by side. And it fascinated me the extent to which they sounded similar. They sounded very similar. One was from the Netherlands and one was from the United States. But those fathers, both of them magistrate judges, they sounded very much alike in the way they defended their respective sons.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They're using their power to help their wayward child.
Well, that happens, and, you know, as a parent, you will do anything to protect your child. But at the same time, they're, you know, I'm not saying that other people should follow, you know, what the Joneses do or the Jane Does and the Johnny Does and the, you know, Smiths and the Millers or what have you. I'm not singling anyone out here. I'm just using a metaphor that's always used in the, you know, trying to, you know, use different names and what have you. So alias names. In any respect, basically my point is that you want to love your children and you want to teach them right and hope that everything that you've taught them, you know, albeit religion and your morals and what you would do as a parent will filter down to them for them to be able to make good choices in life. Now, you know you're a successful parent when they turn around and say, you know what, I have learned from the examples that my family has set for me and the consequences of their actions, you know, and with that, I won't make those same mistakes. And, you know, you see that through, you know, I see that through my kids. They won't make those same mistakes. They, you know, they feel that, you know, being truthful and being honest is very important, that, you know, their education is and their upbringing is who they are, yes, but don't cross that. You know, don't try to say that, hey, I taught you this growing up, and then say, but now as you're an adult and you're learning, or not an adult, but a teenager and you're learning more things, and you see that this is one way, let's say for religion basis, you know, this is what you were taught in religion, but yet don't follow me and see what it is that I do now as a parent because I'm contradicting things. And this has happened with the struggle between my children and their father. And there's just a contradiction. And unfortunately, you know, there's high tension in family dynamics. Again, when certain events happen, life-changing events happen, everybody starts to question things. And you're, as a parent, you want to be able to say, I raised my children to do the right thing. We gave them the tools, and they're going to do the right thing. Well, and that's a good thing in today's society. However, when you come from a powerful family that has money, power, prestige, and a name, okay, what happens is that these fathers or patriarchs of the family dynamic want to make sure their name carries on in a very positive light as much as possible because it does represent them. The last name is theirs. That's where it started before it was the kids. So you have a lot of that, and nobody wants to see their kids get in trouble, but there comes a time where if a parent continuously is sitting there and sweeping things underneath the rug for a child, what are you teaching them? You're teaching them that it's okay to act certain ways, and you know these behaviors. Don't worry, you know, if you need attention, you know, that's also you know, when a parent isn't home that much, that's how a parent or a child will get attention from their family, is to get in trouble all the time. Pay attention to me, whether you like it or not. And I think that I see a lot of those traits, you know, just from on George's side, that I'm, you know, pay attention to me. I'm right here. I need you to have all eyes on me. And that's kind of how I see, you know, that within his family. I do see that. And it's a little obvious, but, and with George's dad being powerful, he's going to say, you know, I stand behind my son, and if my son says it's so, then it's so. And that's because it's a reflection of him too. So it's a very tricky and gray area, if you will, but I think that, you know, you can allow children to make mistakes and, you know, one or two small things. I broke a window and I didn't tell my mom. Those sorts of things, you know, can slide once and again. But when you're talking, you know, domestic abuse and, you know, potential murder charges, and it's a behavior that hasn't stopped bullying, which is associated threats, and Lord knows what other violence is in his past. So, I mean, you know, all of that comes to play. At what point do you say enough's enough? You know, do you let him get in trouble and just say, you know, you have to go and reflect for a while? Who knows?
Those are the choices that Shelley Zimmerman has been facing all week, because she was asked by Good Morning America, do you want to be married and have children? And she said, I want to stay married, of course. And having children, she said, I wouldn't want to have children with him. Those are severe things to say publicly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not surprised he fell apart. That's kind of usual, really.
Yeah, and, you know, with respect to, she's seen things that, you know, we won't see unless she writes a book, and which if this sort of behavior continues, she'll, you know, and I hate to say this, and with all due respect to her dad, but that could have been her today. That's how close George was to her. He could have taken that knife or that iPad and, you know, really executed and done some serious damage to her. And, you know, that is where the part that scares me is that she was that close. He was that close to her in proximity. That's reaching distance, arm length, you know, and the fact that he did not strike upon her was a good thing for him, you know, but unfortunately her father, you know, was accosted and, you know, in trying to protect his daughter. So, you know, that it's, she's seen things that are going to, like I said, unless she writes a book, that, which could, quite possibly could be, that, you know, we won't see or hear about unless people start to come forward, you know, such as the employee that we heard on tape. And that's going to just happen. It's now that he's been, you know, released and trial is over, you know, now that he's showing yet again a very questionable violent side to him, other people are going to come out and say, if I don't speak now, then something could potentially happen down the road to where somebody will either get very hurt or be dead. But we will start to see that. I can almost feel that, because there's a lot of people, as you know, and as Aphrodite said, that are going to be in uproar that this has happened. Is it expected that we could see this trend happening when he when the trial was over? Sure, but I would say that many of us predicted a year, 5 years out, not 2 months. I mean, that's just a little premature and, you know, but expected. I mean, let's be realistic. Who's not expecting it? I would love to hear somebody say that they weren't expecting him to get violent again. I would love to hear that.
I always said he was going to act out again. I was sure of it.
Yeah.
The minute he was out of the limelight, he would do something to get himself back on the front pages again.
Well, we have to wonder how much did Dad, you know, or not Dad, but I mean, how much has Dad's power and influence and his name, you know, and Dad might not even, his father might not even know about a lot of this, but how much, you know, has his father's, position and his power allowed for people to sweep things underneath the rug for Judge, or for, not for Judge, I'm sorry, for George. How much of that is there that we don't know about? That's the other thing. And will those stories start to come forward?
A whole lifetime's worth.
Exactly.
Kathy, I can't thank you enough for joining us. I am so grateful.
You're welcome.
It was wonderful to have you here. It was wonderful to get you out of the office.
Right?
It was wonderful. Anyway,
so
say hello
me.
To everyone over at that end of town.
I will.
And we're going to say good night.
Okie dokie. We're going to say good night until tomorrow. And we'll see what tomorrow brings. I mean, we might have a whole entire new wrap up. Who knows?
Exactly. Well, I thank you. I thank you. And good night to everyone, to all those wonderful people who came and sat with us, like Jackie and Ernest, who just like to sit on our furniture and enjoy it and join us and just not say anything. Hey, Jackie, Ernest, can you at least say good night? They leave their phones on and they sit there.
Good night. This is my first
good
time
night,
on your show. I enjoyed yourself.
This is your first time listening in on something like this?
Are you on every night?
No,
Jackie, no. I come on when something has to be said or something important happens. We're from syndicatednews.net. We can't be over at Block Talk Radio hanging out every night. Impossible.
Well, I'll follow you. I'll come on and follow you. So when you do a show, I can catch up. I enjoyed your show tonight.
Thank you. You should have jumped in there and joined us.
Yeah.
Maybe next time.
I talk too much. Yeah. I told you. Next time, though, I'll be sure to participate.
Sounds like a plan. That sounds like a plan.
Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you for being so kind and so good that without any notice, without any messages, without any warning, I just did a show and people showed up. I'm fascinated with that. It's amazing.
That's great.
Thank you
all
for coming and participating. I really appreciated it. And I'm sure Cassie and Kyle from California appreciates it. We're syndicatednews.net. All the owners are in different states and different locations. And it's fascinating to listen to people that come in and join us and give us a totally different perspective on whatever topic, whatever problem. There's always two or three different ways to solve it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're always open to that. So, you know, if you have some time and you want to surf the web, we have great stories and we welcome any type of feedback. Just leave a comment on any of the stories and we'll make sure to get them and respond accordingly. www.syndicatednews.net. We look forward to hearing from you.
Well, have a good evening, and I thank you for everything, Cassie. Thank you for joining us here at Syndicated News. That's our Chicago, Illinois, Schaumburg office. Thank you so much.
You are
good
welcome.
Night,
you are welcome. Good night.
Bye-bye.